This week in Retronauts, should we fail before completing this podcast, we will disappear before the dawn and vanish forever. Hello, welcome to Retronauts. I'm Diamond Fight. Wait, no, I'm not. I'm Stuart Gyp. I would never deign to be... I got confused, okay? There are many similarities. For example, we're both presenters on Retronauts. That's can't think of any more similarities at all. I guess that's why it works so well, don't you think, the dynamic? We're talking about Shinobi again. You may have noticed that Diamond presented very well the previous episode on Shinobi, has allowed me to present the second episode, such as the grace, I have to say. That was a very graceful thing that you did there, Diamond. But I guess the best thing to do is to just introduce ourselves. So I've already mentioned Diamond, so why don't you start there?
Yes, this is Diamond Fight. That is, yes, it is. The other voice is not Diamond Fight. I am Diamond Fight. And really, I'm more of a Yoko Ninja. That joke will make sense in about an hour.
Oh, cool. Okay. I look forward to laughing my ass off at that one. And Thomas, you joining us again from last time?
Yes, I'm here. And I'm so happy to be here because, you know, this podcast gave me finally the courage to buy that 8-meter scarf I was eyeing all the time.
You got to have the long skirt. But joining us, this time for the first time in a while, actually, who wasn't on the previous episode due to circumstances, I believe virus-based circumstances. It's John Linneman. Hello, John.
Why, hello there, Stu. Yes, virus-based circumstances prevented me from engaging in any Shinobi action. The doctor told me no Shinobi for a month. So
that's you don't like to hear that, do you?
No, you really don't. But
yeah. He wasn't put ahead of Zed, was he, by any chance?
No.
Oh, my God.
I don't think so. That would have been bad.
Is that, John, are your doctors part of the Zed HMO umbrella?
See, here in the UK, we get our Zed for free. It's, you know, it's anyway, Shinobi, what we've already covered so far is everything up to and not including Shinobi 3, Return of the Ninja Master. But because John wasn't here in the previous episode, I would like to ask John specifically. Hi, John. What's your history with Shinobi?
Well, I played a lot of Shinobi throughout the years, and the first one that I played was actually The Revenge of Shinobi on a friend's Sega Genesis. It was actually probably one of the very first games I remember playing on the system at all. This is before I had my own Sega Genesis, and the friend's name was Chris, from what I recall. And he had everything. And this, I think I may have even mentioned this before, but yeah, Shinobi, I remember playing this thinking like, okay, this game has amazing music and it's really fun. And at the time, the closest thing I could really compare it to in my head, at least, was like Castlevania. It was like Ninja Castlevania, you know? And yeah. Now I see like, it's a bit different, but it's that, you know what I mean? It's like a slower paced, walking, you know, very carefully taking out enemies. And I found that really enjoyable at the time, though quite difficult. And I also remember always hearing about like, oh, there's like, you can find Spider-Man in there and stuff like that, which, as we know, was indeed the case up to a point. But then after that, I would go on to play most of the series, I guess you could say. I never really got super into the arcade game or the Master System games or anything like that, but like the mainline games, I played all the way up through the PS2 game, 3DS game, all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, so there's a lot of love for Shinobi there in your heart.
I love the series.
Yeah,
it is one of my favorite ninja series, and there's a lot of ninja series
out and there. You're looking forward to the new one from Blizzard Cube.
Absolutely.
Are we ever?
We'll we'll talk about that a little bit later. But we've got quite a lot of games to cover today, so I think if we focus mainly on the big ones, you know, there are some lesser games coming up that we'll be casting aside, really. Maybe just the one lesser game, really. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we'll all have our own opinions here, but I feel like Shinobi as a series as a whole, the most exciting entries we kind of covered last time, although I do feel like we're going to start with a banger. We're going to start with a banger, and then there's going to be a lot of ups and downs, and some of them are like some of them are worth forgetting, in my opinion. Sorry.
No apologies necessary, you know. Shinobi will be, I don't know, whatever Shinobi will be. I don't know, something funny. Something funny, something clever, not anything I come up with on the spur of the moment. But of course, we're talking about the Mega Drive / Genesis game Shinobi 3 Return of the Ninja Master, also known as the Super Shinobi 2, released 1993 for the 16-bit Sega console, later released on the 3DS Virtual Console. Or was it Virtual Console, or was it like a Sega Ages release? I can't remember. Anyway,
it was on 3D Ages.
It was 3D Ages, of course it was, so that's the same, yes. And as Diamond has mentioned, it is a banger, I would say. It's a stone-cold banger, and it's arguably the best game of the lot in the whole series. Much more dynamic gameplay than Revenge of Shinobi. Not that I'm dismissing Revenge of Shinobi, obviously, but it's a much more slow-paced kind of a game, whereas this is much more of a sort of a, I would say, well, I suppose the original Revenge of Shinobi is kind of a showpiece for the Mega Drive at that time, but this is more of a, like, look what we can do now with this Mega Drive, because there's some amazing visuals in this one.
You know, I have this idea in my head, you know, that Revenge of Shinobi is sort of this gentleman Shinobi game, right? It's slow, it's methodical, and Shinobi 3 is now more of that young, spirited game, right? Going all in now.
I think
that's always the feeling I get.
This is a little bit, maybe not myopic, but I would personally compare it to Streets of Rage versus Streets of Rage 2 in terms of the jump. Like,
it's, yep, I agree.
And that is not, and everyone loves Streets of Rage. It's great. But if you want to play a Streets of Rage game, you're going to play Streets of Rage 2. And that's kind of how I feel about Shinobi. I would play this one over Revenge pretty much every time. And that's me saying two great games, but one of them is much greater for me.
I think it's very telling, you know, because of the weirdness of release schedules and how things came out, you know, Revenge came out on the home console first, and then Sega's port, but not really a port, of Shadow Dancer came out on the home version, which was kind of a return to the arcade action. So when they made this game, they clearly decided, okay, let's go back to, you know, even in name alone, it says, okay, we're going back to the previous game. This is essentially Revenge 2, but they don't call it that. But, you know, it's very much a sequel to that game. But they still decided, okay, we're going back to this game as far as it's not arcadey anymore. We got big stages. You take your time. But also, you can run now. You can run.
Yeah,
you
double
can
tap,
wall jump. Yeah. You can dive kick. You can climb. You can, like, climb on ropes. Like, your ninja is extremely ninja now in ways that he wasn't before. Like, this is a very capital N ninja game.
Absolutely.
Certainly, yeah.
I would actually say that this is one of the quintessential 16-bit action games. One of the top games that you could play that generation in terms of just sheer quality of action. And fundamentally, it is a very different game from The Revenge of Shinobi. But as you say, it is technically, I guess, 2, right? It's the Super Shinobi 2. It's part of the Super Shinobi series specifically.
Not just technically, it is like that.
It is. But I don't believe it has that much in the way of shared staff. Is that right? I think it's a different team that worked on this one, by and large.
Well, Oba returned as supervisor. He was... Yeah. He was kind of the guy. He was kind of the guy for a couple of Shinobi games, and he'll come back. That name will come back up later. But the official credited planner was Naohisa Nakazawa, whose other major credit apparently is Knuckles Chaotix. Which
Jesus Christ!
Yeah, last time that triggered Stu. So yeah, Stu is still angry about that quote.
Yeah, sorry. I really hate that game a lot. but I can't believe this. This is horror. It's like horrifying. The worst person you know who just made a great game. I can't believe it.
But a lot of these guys have amazing credits on so many other great Sega games, right?
Oh, so I kid. I'm not throwing shade at Nakazawa. It's not. I'm sure it's not their fault that Knuckles Chaotix is so crappy. But that is shocking in a way. This game is just like, I completely agree with John. It's one of the premier 16-bit action games. It's got to be in the conversation at least. It's an incredible game.
So to break it down real quick, why? For those that might be listening and wondering, it's all about variety. So this comes from a generation that, a part of the generation where we started to see sort of the, what is it, like the frantic action of like Treasure. Treasure was formed. This is the year of Gunstar Heroes, I believe. Yeah. Coincidence, by the way, all of these sort of started happening around the same time. Konami was into this as well, where you were essentially being faced, I think Nakazato-san called it situation rush, if I recall.
Yep.
Which is the idea that they're constantly throwing new ideas and genre types at the player. So you might, for instance, begin with a side-scrolling section where you're running through taking out enemies, and then it might switch over to a section that's like auto-scrolling, like on the horse, right? There can be vertical sections where you're going down, you know, riding on surfboards. You're facing very different types of stage designs. Like one, you might just be running along the ground. Others, you're like dealing with these overhead climbing things. You know, you're making your way through it. You know, when you get to the lab, the nature of the enemies, the way you have to deal with them, the elevator stuff, all of these different things, the moves you need to use, the placement of stuff, and the types of scenarios that you encounter, all of this stuff is constantly changing. Right. And as a result, it feels like you're going through a much greater, crazier adventure. It's nothing like Strider, but I feel like Strider itself sort of kicked off this style of design. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. That's a good point. Yeah. Set piece led game.
Yeah. Right. And
John,
I think
John,
Strider.
Could we say that basically Shinobi 3 is a bit of a decompressed Strider?
In a way, and this is where a lot of the stuff, like I also think of like Rocket Knight Adventures and stuff like that, it's the same era where it's pulled out, it is decompressed in that the stages are longer, because Strider has very short stages, right? It's constantly changing, but like screen by screen.
That's what
changing.
I meant.
This is more, as you say, like level by level changing, which I think feels better overall. And the mechanics in general are more refined, which... Again, if we look back at the Revenge of Shinobi, there's all those new moves. You have double tap to run. You have that jump and kick move, right? Which allows you to do things like you run real fast, you hit the attack button, and rather than just like attacking in place, he actually slides forward and does like a lunge attack. Then you can do a jump in the air, then a kick down off somebody else, then kick off their head, flip through the air, throw down your shuriken, and then slam down to the ground and then go back into a run. And once you actually get the timing and the pattern of the enemies, you kind of develop this almost like flow through the levels, like you flow like water, like a ninja, right? And that, I think, is something that Revenge of Shinobi doesn't really offer in comparison, which is not to knock it. It's a very different style of game, but I think that's what makes this so interesting, because it is a game where you can sort of fumble your way through it. You get through each situation okay. But as you play and replay the game, you gain new skills and an ability to actually read the scenario and play through it in this like very smooth way. And that is specifically why I like playing this game so often. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's worth noting as well. Though it is this, you know, situation rush set piece based thing where things are constantly changing, as you say, you've got levels that like the auto scroll levels where you're on the horse or hilariously you're on the surfboard.
Yes.
But they don't actually they don't change the mechanics, so to speak. Like you're still fully in control. Even when you're in this new situation, you know what's going to happen when you press B, when you press C. You move left, right, you throw shurikens. But I think that's important because once variety got into, say, for example, a PS1 games, it would be every single level would be like the controls have completely changed. We're in a different world now.
I mean, you're right, Stu, but in the 16-bit era, I still think they generally kept the controls, right? Like I mentioned Rocket Knight, for instance, and Rocket Knight doesn't change its mechanics. Even Strider really doesn't. And honestly, as you get into the modern era and you look at stuff like Naughty Dog-style shooters, like the Uncharted series, they actually kind of feel like they're related to this, and they also don't really change the mechanics. And that's what made them interesting. It's like, look what we're doing with this whole control system. By shifting the scenario around the player. And Shinobi 3 is very much one of the early examples of this.
And the control scheme we should talk about, because obviously it does support the six-button controller for the Mega Drive, though you can't actually use that control scheme unless you enter a code, I believe, on the options screen. Whereas when it was released on 3DS in the 3D ages, it was just labeled expert mode. You could just enable it, which meant, I believe it puts like block on its own button, because usually you just hold B and press down or something like that to block, which is obviously not quite as intuitive as just tapping a button. But it's another thing that, I mean, the first time I played through this game, I didn't know you could block. And I'm like, why is this game so hard? and then it's a lot easier once you know you can do that. There's so much to see in this game. I think of this and I just think of some of the absolute premier visuals on the Mega Drive, like that horrible, enormous, melty-faced organ, pile of organs with a face that you fight that's like wibbly sort of, I don't even know what you would call that, like almost Mode 7-ish kind of distortion on it as it gets bigger, as it emerges. But
along those same lines, Stu, one of the big changes visually over the last game is that they really went big on overlaid parallax scrolling. So even right away, the very first stage, you have a tree level, then a grass level, and then another layer with trees and grass, and then more trees, and they all scroll independently. And then by the time you get to that first area with the horse, with the kite, you've got like three different layers of independently scrolling grass. Then you have a layer of trees that scroll with reflection on the water. Then you have another small layer of mountains, which also scrolls independently, followed by a different layer of clouds, two layers of clouds, actually, that again, all scroll independently. So you have all this different parallaxing movement in the background, which gives it this sense of depth that I would say the Genesis kind of became known for, much more so than Super NES.
Yeah.
Not that Super NES couldn't do it, but very far fewer games did this sort of thing because it required you to do these sort of like raster interrupt tricks where you're changing the scan line update rate on a, you know, as you're drawing the screen basically. So it's a little bit of a CPU thing.
That horse racing stage so much because, right? As you mentioned, not only that all these layers are scrolling at the same time, but the kites appear in the background, and the kites are basically how the ninja are coming to attack you. So as you see more kites appear, that's telling you, like the player, okay, there's another enemy. And then as you get towards the end of the stage, all of a sudden there's like one big kite, and you're like, uh-oh, what the hell is behind the big kite?
Yes.
And the answer is a boss.
And I think the kites have like Oni written on it, so which is fun.
It's very, I mean, it's very cinematic, isn't it? To boil it down, it's a very cinematic game, drawing you into like
the, oh my gosh, dude,
the narrative. I mean, the narrative is very, is it's kind of a slim narrative, but they really bring you. I mean, I'm going to compare it to Sonic 3 and Knuckles now. Sorry, I know I've done five episodes about that friggin' thing, but it is similar. It's you know, it's wordless storytelling, and while there are, you know, there are some cutscenes, but it's all just now this is happening, and you are reacting to it. You are not being told what's happening. It's brilliant.
And there's a progression, right? Like we were just talking about the horse stage. You're riding through the horse stage, and when you reach the end, you're essentially approaching that first like lab-like area. It's like a techno fortress. And then you work your way through that, and then you get that elevator sequence, which is very cool, which again has lots of multi-layer scrolling, followed by a boss fight. So it all the levels have this sort of progression where you're like, okay, we start here in this area, and by moving through the stage, we're like working through different sections on the way to the boss, which is awesome.
But if I may jump in quickly, with
please,
I mean, lots of stuff, good stuff, definitely. But I would also pose a theory that the game does not make such a good first impression when you play it for the very first time, because at least from
a
my
controversial take there.
Yeah, let me explain. So, because the first stage looks great, but it's only just one path left to right. There is no different levels, no anything. It's just run across and kill the enemies. And if you don't know the controls at this point, the running, the jump kick and everything, if you just play it like you played Revenge of Shinobi before, it also feels weird because you jump really high at the beginning and you have to get in there. You have to really get to grips with the new system and the new new elements to get your fun. And I think that's why they made the stage that way. Just here is this long level play field, get used to the controls.
Yeah, that's interesting because, like, you would approach the way I approach this game now, and I'm not like an expert at this game, but like, I boot this game up and I'm in full sprint. Like, I can just go in, you know, through this first level. Yep, but I can see what you mean. Like, when you're playing through it for the first time, playing it like Revenge of Shinobi, you're going to kind of be like, okay.
You know, I remember that when I bought the game because the German press was more or less lukewarm on the game. Most of them that it's a nice action game, but the first one was a lot better. So I still bought it because it's Shinobi, and all the first impression was, yeah, I may have just wasted a lot of money. But I mean, after a couple of minutes, I was invested. But as I said, the first impression.
That's fascinating, Thomas, I have to admit, because I kind of felt opposite about it in that I'm a big fan of games that start out very narrow and then fan out as you play. Mm. Like, I don't like games that are like, here's this giant big level right away.
I want a giant big level, you know, but just compared to the first level of Super Shinobi.
I actually think I like this first level more. I think it makes a stronger impression, actually, because it's just like, it's very straightforward, very clean, and it just like lets you fully immerse yourself in understanding how to play it. And right away, even on your first time, you'll start to discover like, wait, there's more to these controls than you might first think. And you won't know them yet.
That's the point of the level, yeah.
Right. And I feel like I got that right away. And I remember the first time I ever played it thinking like, oh, wow, this seems really cool.
It puts you in the cave where you have to wall jump, doesn't it? Quite early. Like it's a harm, like danger free wall jump zone to sort of teach you that that's a thing. I can see where you're coming from. I think I have to side with John on this one, but like, I can see.
See it too. Exactly.
It's just a thought. I mean, it's a brilliant game. I'm just relating my first experience I had with it.
I would say, Thomas, part of that probably comes from the fact, like you sort of suggested, it's very different. So if you're coming at this like, oh, I want more Revenge of Shinobi, or you like played, say, Shadow Dancer or Arcade Shinobi, this is not that, right? It is very different. Like, I would say Shadow Dancer's first stage feels a lot more bombastic, if you will, with all those explosions in the city. They're just like blowing everything up. There's dudes everywhere. You're like, oh my God.
It's interesting because I think somehow there's this kind of idea of Shinobi as a more restrained series, but it's kind of insane, isn't it? It's really like dynamic and nuts and Sega crazy. It's like I love it for that. But we should talk about the music a little bit, I think, because we've got three composers on this one. I forgot to mention this. As Diamond did the notes for this, because this wasn't originally going to be two parts, and I have to thank Diamond for that publicly.
Thank you, Diamond.
Because they said I have to. if I don't, they'll beat us. Basuyuki Nagao, I don't know how to pronounce that, I'm really sorry, composed on this, as well as Hirofumi Murasaki of Clockwork and I, Puyo Puyo, Dragon Force, and Morihiko Akiyama of Columns 3, which maybe that has good music. I don't know. It's Columns. I don't like Columns very much. But, that's a lot of composers, and I'm noting that there is one name that is particularly absent from this. I think we all know who I'm talking about, even though that their name has escaped from my head, which is why I'm stalling. How on earth could I have forgotten that name?
Yeah.
But I mean, I was absolutely convinced they were involved in this because some of the music is so Kashiro coded. But
really, to me, it felt like the soundtrack was clearly very different style from where he would have normally was going at this time, I think, but not in a bad way. It's very awesome in its own. It just has a different flavor, and I think that flavor suits the change in the action, you know?
Toshiro would have been, at this point, was he in his kind of, like, experimental techno phase of...
Believe so. I mean, he was doing a lot of...
H3 and so on.
Doing other games at the same time, I think, but... Yeah, I think he was in that experimental phase, and it probably, like, this was sort of like his more, I don't know what you say, street phase, where it's like experimenting with more electronic dance kind of music as opposed to like something that would fit this style of Shinobi game.
I also wonder he might have just been kind of shinobied out, because don't forget, beyond Revenge of Shinobi, he was also very involved in the Game Gear Shinobis. So,
Yes.
He might have just had enough Shinobi. He's like, hey, we're doing another one for Mega Drive. And he's like, you know, maybe not. Let me sit this one out.
Yeah, so around 93, he did Slap Fight MD and ActRaiser 2 and was working on Streets of Rage 3.
Yeah.
And getting ready, I guess also Ancient must have been doing Beyond Oasis / Story of Thor at this time.
Yeah. I think he was pretty busy at the time.
So the dude was just busy, man. Like, he was doing a lot of stuff. And I think
no shade intended at Yuzo Koshiro for sitting this one out. I think that they did a fantastic job with the music. I really like the music in this game. So
it's a different approach, I think, you know?
Yeah.
I think the music in this game is it's supporting the action. I think compared in the first one, the music is going all to the front and just doing its thing. And the second one, as I said, it has a supporting role for me. Because I could, from the back of my head, I could pretty much hum every tune from Revenge of Shinobi. Mm. Maybe I'll get out two or three from three, but that doesn't mean it's a bad soundtrack. It's just a different approach.
What? I'm actually surprised to hear that, because some of the songs in Shinobi 3 are so good. It's like that it sits alongside something like Thunder Force 4 for me, where it's just like just goes,
some of them,
right?
Absolutely.
Where these songs are bangers. Though. I'd say almost all the music is great, and some are obviously really standouts, but all of it is awesome. It's a very good soundtrack.
I think that the question really, because we've said a lot about Shinobi 3, do we have any more to say about Shinobi 3 at this point, other than go and buy it?
I mean, there was prototypes of this game.
There were?
This seems like a game that went through a lot of difficulty in terms of development, and I believe there's some history out there about that. But clearly while working on it, they had various different ideas compared to how it ended up turning out. And you can actually find some of these prototypes on the internets, if you look, and they start very differently. Like, one of the ones I remember playing starts in that sort of, the fire stage, you know, with the burning trees, and the oil drums. Like, that's like the first stage.
Wow.
And I think those were all around in like 1992 or so.
They sent them out to the press.
There's also a different one with like sort of like verticality with trees, if I recall. Like there's a fair amount of stuff going on in these prototypes that makes it decidedly very different from the other. Yeah,
what I just recalled. You said the verticality one. They recycled that one game later.
Yeah.
I mean, you can go back and look at the magazines around 92 when this game was being previewed, and it's very different looking, like really super different looking. So there's definitely some trouble there.
Yeah, I mean, the most famous thing about it is the tiger in the game, of course. If you look at the West End cover, there used to be a tiger in the background, but the tiger was taken out of the game, so they had to remove it from the cover, and so it's a bit empty in that spot.
They probably saw that there was a tiger in Quackshot, and they were like, they've done it. They've done it already. We've got to take the tiger out.
Tiger quota is filled. We can't do anymore. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Exactly. But either way, the prototypes are very slow in plotting. I would say more like Revenge of Shinobi, but there's less overall action going on. And the levels are a bit more open-ended looking, where like they're more tall and wide at the same time, which was largely done away with in the final game to create more exciting stages. So clearly they were not satisfied with how the game was turning out and opted to change things, which I'm glad they did.
I would say, speaking of changing things, 1993. yeah, thank you. That was a good segue, wasn't it? Then we have a 2-year gap, and of course, the Saturn gets released, the fabled Sega Saturn. And 1995 gives us the next installment in the Shinobi series, which is Shinobi Legions in America, I believe, also known as Shinobi X in Europe, I want to say.
Yep.
And Shin Shinobi Den in Japan, a Saturn exclusive game, which has, for some strange reason, never been ported or re-released in any form. And it wasn't actually published by Sega in the United States.
Nope.
Which I guess they were washing their hands of it to some extent. However, this is a fairly notorious game, but I didn't play it until I came around to this podcast. I gave it a little go. And I'm going to be real. I know it's me. I don't think it's horrible at all.
I agree.
I think it's okay. Game. But the major thing that jumps out at you with this is they've gone all, Pit Fighter, Mortal Kombat. They've gone with your digitized visuals of actors. And it's an interesting look, and it lends the whole thing slightly uncanny, crazy vibe, which I kind of like. And also it brings us, full motion video cutscenes, full story, fully voice acted. Well, I say voice acted, fully acted, I should say. But it is a bit shonky. Like, it's not up to the standard of Shinobi 3 or even really Revenge of Shinobi, I would say. It's a very odd game. It actually reminded me, though it's nowhere near as bad as this, of Strider Returns in a weird way.
Oh, no way.
It's not like even that. Close to as bad as that, but it reminded me of that in terms of vibes because of like the early level where you're just climbing around on loads of random tree branches with no sort of rhyme or reason to it, spammed with loads of ninjas. But Stu,
I think you're onto something very important there. Imagine if someone made a Strider game in the 90s and filmed real actors for all the characters like that. Don't you know in your head how stupid that would look?
Well, hold on, Diamond. let me present something else to you instead. This was 1995, after all. What if they did pre-rendered CGI sprites instead? How much worse that would be.
Yeah. Okay.
We should count ourselves fortunate that they went for digitized FMV style sprites as opposed to pre-rendered horrible 1995 CGI sprites.
Don't worry, we'll see those in 2002.
but the fact that they could have done something even stupider doesn't mean that the live action actors aren't kind of dumb, and I feel like really hurt the game in more ways than we can possibly enunciate at this point.
I think looking back at it now, though, it's easier to look at it as kind of kitsch, and it captures a campy vibe, but back then, camping was not really the thing at all.
I would say, really, I also don't love these digitized sprites, but compared to other contemporary digitized sprites games, I actually think they do it better than most. Like, it's not as good as Mortal Kombat, which is actually does a great job with it, but like most attempts at digitized sprites were way worse than this. That doesn't make it good.
Stuff like Way of the Warrior and so on.
But it's still okay enough.
I mean, I'm going to be real. I didn't have a bad time playing this. I thought it was kind of fun. I think it moves slickly enough. I think the response is good. The controllers are good. It's got the expert controls from Shinobi 3. You can block anytime. You can chuck shurikens. You can do all the same stuff, more or less, that you can do in Shinobi 3.
The level design is not nearly as good.
It is not nearly as good. Yeah. No, it is not.
And, John, if we can go back to what you were talking about, like, remember we went at length about how Shinobi 3, Super 2, whatever, like backgrounds had all these scrolling layers, right? And they were a visual feast, you know? And these backgrounds are largely just like digital photographs. Like, there's one level I can think of where it's like, it's very similar to a level in actually Revenge of Shinobi where it's like you're going along a port and like there's like some boats in the water and you're jumping from like concrete things and there's a city in the background. And in this version, because everything's digital, it's like, oh yeah, it looks like someone took a picture of Hong Kong or maybe Vancouver, and it's like it's just this giant like bitmap, like a Mugen stage, and it's like it's so flat and uninteresting to like walk at.
It's like one of the Mortal Kombat. I mean, it's not badly done, as John said, but it does remind me of something like Blood Warrior in the arcade. It's just kind of like a knockoff of something, you know? It has that kind of a vibe.
Do you remember there's a like when Taito did Bubble Bobble, they did Bubble Symphony, and then they which was great. But then after that, they started doing, I think it was Bubble Bobble Returns.
Yeah,
and it has stupid digitized backgrounds.
Yeah, like a photo of a dog or something.
It's like a photo of a dog, and you're just like
Bubble Memories, Bubble Bubble 3, I think. Yeah,
it's like, well, this is extremely dumb.
And it is a shame, because I feel like if this had been a traditional sprite game, it wouldn't be nearly as you've said, Diamond, it wouldn't be nearly as reviled in that respect. But it's still not good enough.
I'm wondering about that, why they decided to go with this digitized sprite. Was it an idea to maybe make the series more appealing for the States, for example? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, Mortal Kombat was a big thing over there, and then Sega just saying, nah, we don't want it.
I mean, I think...
it's quite ironic.
Dude, in 1995, whether we like it or not, traditional, like, .A sprite games were not popular.
Yeah, yeah,
like, that's not what companies wanted. That's not where the audience was.
I think there's a... It was probably a motivation, was probably the fact that Sega had new hardware, and like all platforms back then, they wanted to show, oh, here's a game you could never possibly imagine seeing on the old 16-bit systems. Here it is, a Shinobi with real people and full motion video. And, you know, I think like a lot of games of that era, like a lot of other games that, you know, hype their FMV components, like you watch them today and you're like, okay, you spent a lot of money on this. It looks like something I couldn't play Super Nintendo or Sega Genesis, but guess what? Those games are just better. So, thanks.
I mean, I know. And I think it seems like even the developers may have been a little bit unhappy with this one in terms of the fact that they're not even like credited in the game. Like you just get the credits for the actors and the live action sort of crew. Though based on what Diamond has put in the notes here, thank you again, Diamond, for the notes.
I can try to code this a little bit because if you play the game gives you almost no information about who made it. It's just give credits for the people, you know, who were actually like on camera and being filmed and like the director of the live action stuff. So based on a variety of social media posts and information included in the Shinobi Music Collection from a few years back, it looks like this may have been a Tosei game, which would explain why the credits are so sparse. Because a lot of Tosei games just don't say who they made it by. But there's indications that Oba may have served as producer, and that Hideshi Tatsuno, who was the planner for Ninja Spirit, was thanked. He was thanked in these musical notes as saying he gave the game design a tune-up, like in Japanese, like tune-up shita or whatever. And to me, what makes this extra funny is that in the Shinobi Music Collection, they do not cover this game at all. They only cover the earlier games. So in this collection music for different Shinobi games, we have sort of a peek behind the scenes of this Shinobi game, which I feel is definitely a black sheep situation. And it's just like, that is so weird that this is how we're getting the information out.
I mean, you kind of get it, don't you? Why they bury this one a little bit? I mean, the weirdest thing about it for me is that this isn't even like the least known Shinobi game. We'll get to that in a minute, but
if we talk music though, we should talk about the music.
We should,
because that's even weirder. That's even weirder because this game was, you know, if it's Tosei, said we're not sure, but we think it's Tosei. Tosei made this. They released it in Japan. They released it in the U.S. It was delayed in the Europe because someone in Sega Europe said they didn't like this music. They hated the music. So they went out and got Richard Jacques, who had done other stuff, like, hey, we want you to redo the entire music for this game. And according to Jacques, he said he had 2 weeks to make 20 different songs. He only had about 200K memory to play with. And he said, you know, I appreciate it. This is real recognized, real moment. You know, Richard Jacques said, I tried my best to sound like Yuzo Koshiro, which is impossible because he is an absolute genius.
So is Richard Jacques, because he gave us the Sonic R soundtrack, which is the finest soundtrack ever recorded for a video game.
I think both soundtracks have their merit. I just think it's kind of shocking to see a game like this have two completely different soundtracks in this regards. You know, that one producer in one territory would say, no, Sega Japan, I reject you. I want more music, different music.
It's like the Sonic CD situation all over again, right? Like, it's the same thing where it's just somebody decided we don't like this music in this region for whatever reason, and then they changed it.
I think something I want to mention about this game that's a bit more specific is that it has this It feels like, even though it's, you know, a 2D game, and I don't say that as a dirty word, obviously. I love 2D games. That's why I'm here. They try and make it big in the same way as, for me, like, for example, the Batman Forever arcade game that got ported to Saturn and PlayStation, because you collect like a sword power up and it creates this enormous like samurai in the background. And whenever you attack, that same graphic appears and there's like explosion sound effects and as if it, they're
talking going, about the arcade game.
Yeah, a little bit. Just in the sense of like, what the hell is going on? Why is all this stuff happening right now? This is crazy.
I hear you, Stu.
You know what I'm talking about? It's like this.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a weird power up. It's an unnecessarily flashy sort of power up, I think.
Yeah.
Like you cast the magic spell. Like, you know, a lot of the shinobi games have magic spells that has a flashy like trigger sound effect, or you know, fire comes on the screen. But with that one, you summon this. I think it's called Bishamon, and the statue appears, and there's a big sword slash. And then for the rest of the stage, or if you die, your sword is powered up and like you can slash and create statues like out of nowhere, and like your character is blinking like red. And there's also like a somersault move you can do where you do four somersaults in a row and just like what's going on now? Like I also laughed because I watched a couple playthroughs because I didn't get I remember playing this at one point in my life, but I never got very far. But I looked up a playthrough to see what happens at the end of the game. And I swear to God, the end of the game, it's like you're fighting a ninja, which, by the way, I think I mentioned this earlier, but I'll say it again. Since the whole game is full of actors, most of the bosses are just other actors. You know what I mean? Like, this series has a long, rich history of, like, bonkers-ass boss battles. And in this game, it's mostly just like, okay, here's a guy with a spear. Here's a guy with a mask. Here's a guy with two hooks. Oh no.
I mean, I played this again today, and I noted that at the end of stage two, you fight someone who looks a bit like a biker with like a mullet. And I defeated that boss, and it wasn't horrible. It wasn't too difficult. It felt very sloppy and imprecise, but I beat them. And then I go into the next area, and it just seems to be the same guy again. Like, nice. Immediately. And I'm like, okay, I think that's enough of Shinobi X now. Like,
there's one stage where instead of a boss, it's another elevator level. And like the elevator level against a ton of dudes is the boss. And you're like, come on. And the last boss, again, it's a really weird fight because like you're collecting orbs or something. And like, once you get all the orbs, it's almost like a Sonic sort of a Chaos Emerald situation, like you get all the orbs and then a big like splashy effect happens on screen, and then the boss like drops dead, and then there's an FMV cutscene where, you know, they emote to each other, and you're just like, this is so less interesting than, you know, the original arcade game in 1987 where you fought a weird ninja who had weird ninja powers. Like, this is so dull.
I mean, I enjoyed the cutscenes personally for their camp value. And
I think Diamond hit it on the head there by saying dull. That's how I would describe this game. It's not bad, but it is dull. It's not that interesting. And that's bad in itself.
I think that I think there's a one more speed bump to get over before we get back to the good stuff. Let's keep it brief with this one, because this doesn't deserve an enormous amount of scrutiny, which is The Revenge of Shinobi again. That's not the name. I just added that again. It's just called The Revenge of Shinobi. And that was released in 2000.
Should have been in the box.
Yeah. But it should have been called Revenge of Shinobi, but exponentially shitter.
Okay, Stu, let me set this up for the audience. Yeah. This is a great thing. So I only
2002 GBA.
I only played this recently because I saw it on this episode, and I was like, all right. And it's got freaking 2D. It's a 2D game, GBA. What could go wrong? Yeah. Well,
a lot.
Within the first few seconds, the game stops you from playing. It brings up a text box and tells you to push up in the direction of the slope to ascend.
Mm.
And I'm like, oh no. Like that, I feel like that says it all right there. The first stage is one of those stages that stops you every like 10 seconds to tell you what to do.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a product of that era, but you can instantly tell, like, okay, this is made by somebody that doesn't really seem to understand any of this stuff. They don't know why Shinobi was a beloved series in the first place, and they just made some sort of generic little sort of like action-y game with a strange aesthetic. It's a character, I think on the notes, it replaced the Prince of Persia with a ninja, and I think the reason you say that it's because he has a lot of animation frames, which sounds good in theory, but it makes the character just seem weird. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel like the entire game just doesn't, you know, we've already been through a lot of shinobis that feel different than other shinobis, but this one, like, even just looking at it, you're kind of like, what the hell, who came up with this? The strangest thing to me, I think, of all the strange things about this game is the fact that this came out in 2002, which, of course, this is a very long gap between this yep. and the previous game, but it's also the same year that we get a brand new Shinobi game that we'll talk about in a few minutes, which is, you know, you can say you love it or hate it, but it's got a lot more interesting ideas, and it's like, if this came out in, say, 2000 or 2001, yeah. and someone's like, okay, we want to make sure that people don't forget we own Shinobi, well, let's just get a Shinobi game out there. But it's like, no, this should be the year of the big Shinobi revival. But you've also got this crap, which is like...
I mean, it doesn't have any flair, which is something that all the Shinobi games have. I think even Legions has some flair to it, like some idea of like them going, okay, we're going for this, and they achieved that to some extent. But this game, to me, is just... Look, back in the GBA days, I played a lot of platformers that were made by Vicarious Visions, and they were based on games like Shrek and Madagascar and all that sort of thing. And they were better than this. Like, but this game has a very similar soundtrack to those games, same instruments. It has similar visuals with the pre-rendered ugly sprites, but it also has awkward controls and boring levels. And that's just death for a game like this.
And
I don't think it's god awful, but for a Shinobi game, it's atrocious. Like, there's no excuse for it.
The other thing that drives me nuts about this, I don't know about you guys, is that he's perpetually in a fighting game stance. Did you notice that? He's like in Mortal Kombat stance with his hands out, like, ready to fight.
Yeah.
And that's how you walk around.
You can double tap to run still, but there's really no reason to. There's really no utility to doing
it
that in this game.
It just feels wrong. It reminds me of playing Tekken Force, where you take a fighting game engine and try to make another game out of it.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't look good in motion or feel right.
It's just the worst thing for me is it is just boring levels. They are not interesting to explore. There's nothing worth finding in any of them. The enemies are all incredibly easy to kill. Like the first boss, I know it's the first boss, but all it does is you attack it once, walk away while it does an area of effect thing, walk back, attack it again, does the same thing again. That's like 10 times you've got to do that. And there's no challenge. There's no thought. It's, you don't have to dodge anything. You don't have to do anything. It's just brain off. It's mushy. These games are not supposed to be this boring.
You know what I find really annoying about the game? In the first couple of levels, right? I go to the levels and there's a house. I go inside. There's something. Yes. Next house. It looks the same. Next house. Yep. Same. One more floor. Next house. It's the same. And oh my God. That's right. Just
like, why did they put those houses in there? I was exactly what I wanted to comment on. It's like they added this mechanic now where you're stopping, pressing up to go in a door, and you're just like in a small room that's not interesting. And then you go back out. I mean, that can work in an action game. The tremendous Bloody Wolf from Data East, for instance, has those little rooms you go in, but This is no Bloody Wolf.
I'd like to take this opportunity just to recommend a better GBA game about fighting, which is similar, actually, which is Bruce Lee Return of the Legend from Vicarious Visions, which is an underrated game.
Well, Visions in general is underrated, right?
Yeah, they are. I mean, I love, that's why I brought them up earlier. I love their GBA games. I think they deserve an episode, maybe one day, but that's better than this. And this, it was mentioned, I think, but this was the studio that also made Altered Beast Guardian of the Realms, which was a GBA Altered Beast game that is awful. This is better than that, but that's not saying much. It's really not. So I don't think that there's not worth talking about this. We've got games to talk about.
You know, real quick though, thinking of it again, when you look at the way the sprites are animated combined with the giant aimless levels, this feels like a weird unholy mix of Shaq Fu in terms of animation and sprites.
Oh wow!
With Michael Jordan, Chaos in the Windy City.
Mm.
So
you're not wrong, although I would rather play the Michael Jordan game.
Oh yeah, the Michael Jordan game's significantly better than this, but I'm still reminded of it with that kind of weird level design.
I completely agree,
John, you making that analogy, now I really want to see a Shinobi game where you play basketball.
Yeah, exactly. There we go.
I mean, if I can say
Shinobi Bryant, does that work?
If I can say one nice thing about this game, there is a bit of nice parallax in the levels. So that's something maybe.
I'm also fond of the way that the cartridge is quite small, so you could easily lose it. That's also cool. But let's not talk about this anymore, because 2003, we got something pretty, I would say pretty special, which is the 2002 PS2 Shinobi, just named Shinobi, which is made by Overworks. And this is the first 3D Shinobi game in, you know, third person control kind of thing. Following on from, you know, Devil May Cry, not that it plays like Devil May Cry, but it's following on from that. And it's a game that I remember when it came out, it was met with quite a lot of, why is this so hard? From people who I don't think really learned the rules of it. But what do we think of this one? What do we think of Shinobi on PS2?
Everyone? Well, for starters, I want to point out that you mentioned it's developed by Overworks, right?
Yeah.
And this team has a long history with Sega. But as of 2002, when this came out, I think they were best known for Skies of Arcadia, which was considered one of the greatest RPGs of that era.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still beloved to this day. And it's really what I think that's the first game where they used the Overworks name. So I believe a lot of the staff was involved with stuff like Deep Fear on the Saturn, and there was definitely some involvement with Sakura Taisen as well.
I mean, they did 3, which is one of the really big ones.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, coming from them, I was already hyped. You know, I like Shinobi. Yeah. I love Skies of Arcadia. This PS2 game comes along. It's 2002. It's good, but there's some issues, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing issue, and it's written on the notes here, but the first thing that I noticed when I revisited it with this and the follow up is the camera kind of sucks pretty bad. Like, I had big trouble with the camera on this one.
It's an era where we were still figuring these things out.
Yeah.
Yes. But yeah, it is very tricky to keep the camera where you want it. I also know by default, I think it's like, it's revert. I never know, like, when you deal with camera controls on the right stick, there's normal and there's inverse, and which one I like, I never remember which one I like, but this game is the way I don't like, it's and you backwards. Can't change it.
Yep.
So Thomas and I played this recently, right? And I'll let you expand on this in a second, but there is talk of this originally having started on Dreamcast. I'm actually wondering how true that is, considering that the timeline was listed around May of 2001, and they say, oh yeah, after Dreamcast was discontinued, they canceled it, but Dreamcast had already been discontinued. So I'm not sure what's up with that. But if, let's say it was in development for Dreamcast, they wouldn't have had a right stick. Instead, what they probably would have done is assigned camera centering to, like, the left trigger, which then, Thomas, you noticed, hey, that function is still in the PS2 game.
It is. And it feels better, I think. I think the camera, moving it with the right stick, just feels very iffy and wonky and not responsive at all. And as you all said already, it doesn't feel good moving the camera like that. But if I just center it behind me all the time or need it, it feels... It's not perfect, but it's better than I do it the way I'm used to now.
We should talk about the game more generally. I mean, you're not playing as Joe Musashi anymore, playing as Hotsuma, who has a much more, I say much more dynamic. He's obviously, Joe is very dynamic, but in this game, there's quite a lot of wall running. There's quite a lot of dashing around, jumping off walls, trying to make multiple curved wall jumps over pits that kill you instantly and make you repeat the whole level.
I think this is a proper reimagining in a way that I was excited to see, right? Like, it's Shinobi, but it's a new character. It's a new style.
It's bloody and dark and
a very different look. It's a dark game. It's one focused on very precise action. And they found a lot of new ideas in terms of how he deals with foes. Like, obviously, there's the raw wall running, jumping, and everything. But does that whole system, I can't remember if it has a name or not, but... Is it, Tate? I think, Diamond, is it the Tate system?
I think I'm trying to talk about, yes, this is the joke I wanted to make a long time ago, yes.
So please, I'll let you get into that then, actually, because I think this is very cool.
So, yeah, it's called Tate, which is written in two kanji that I do not know how they read those as Tate. That makes no sense to me, but whatever. Yeah. Japanese language, it has a lot of mysteries. But yeah, when you're fighting enemies, they appear on screen, there's like a little icon that shows how many enemies are active basically in the area. And, you know, most enemies don't take a lot of hits. So the idea is if you can kill a bunch of enemies in a row without wasting too much time, then what happens is the sort of game stops and you get almost like a mini cutscene where, you know, you put away your sword and then all the guys drop dead at once or like it's split in half at once. And it looks awesome. And if you do that, the game also gives you more and bigger amounts of pickups. Like, you know, instead of getting maybe one health refill, you get three health refills. Like, it wants you to do this. The game wants you to do this, and you as the player want to do this because it looks cool.
Dude, it's totally that anime style, omae wa moushinderu kind of thing, right? Where it's
exactly.
the hero is puts away the bloody sword and everyone just falls dead. It's very cool.
I think it's absolutely awesome. And I never get tired of seeing it. The incentive, of course, it's not a score focused game, though. I think it does grade you and rank you on your performance. I've actually forgotten. It's been a while since I touched this one.
It does.
So if you're able to, and you can sort of build up the power to the extent that you can, I remember that if you're good enough in the levels, the bosses, you can either one shot or take a huge chunk off with one attack if you've managed to build this power up enough. But, it's been a while since I played it, unfortunately.
What's interesting about this, though, is that this was during an era of third-person combat games becoming popular in titles like Devil May Cry, which had only just come out in 2001, by the way, I believe. Yes. No. Yeah, 2001. It would have
been 2001.
Yeah, 2001.
Holds up.
But games like Devil May Cry were very much, there was that connection to Biohazard, Resident Evil, right? And there was this move to make action games a bit more open-ended, where you're actually exploring locations, obtaining power-ups, items, whatever, in order to progress. Whereas Shinobi is very much a straightforward game. It's like, here's a level, you've got to get through the level, and then you get to the next level. Yeah. Which at the time felt a little bit older, but in retrospect, it's something I actually really like about it.
Oh, I completely agree. When I replayed, I went back to this, I was very struck by, this is very linear. And that's good. It's a very 16-bit, stage-by-stage, learn the levels, get good kind of a game. You don't really adapt in this. I think you just learn. That's different. I know it makes no sense what I just said, but it's not like in a situation you need to be going in, you need to be thinking, okay, I'm going to deal with this way, and you don't generally get an enormous chance to make it up if you make a mistake, because it's quite a punishing experience. But the levels aren't super long. No. And you definitely can feel yourself getting better and feeling more cool and more like a ninja, which I really appreciated. I think it does capture the vibe of Shinobi 3 and Revenge in 3D quite well. I'd honestly compare it to again, this is maybe a hot take, but I think that the Castlevania 64 captures the Castlevania vibe very well, while being obviously a different experience. You do get some of the same kinds of challenge, and that, I think that's what you've got here with Shinobi.
Absolutely.
I think, if I may, I forget who said this. It's been said a long time ago, but I feel like it really applies to this game specifically. Like, your character and their motions and their attacks, there's a lot to love about that. But as you talk about these levels, the levels are kind of boring. Like, it's a lot of streets and hallways. And I feel like, the quote that rattles around the back of my head is like, Japanese studios, when they make a video game, they start with the character and like pick all the things the character can do and go build out. And they say that most Western studios, what they want to build the world first, and then they populate the world with characters. And I feel like this, if that's true, I don't know if that is true for studios as a whole, but it feels like it's true for this game, because like Shinobi, like Hatsuma, like the Hotsuma, the guy you're playing, has all this cool stuff you can do. But like you're running around, you're in Tokyo, and apparently there was a big earthquake, so there's been some kind of disaster. So like all you're doing is like running around these sort of like alleyways and rooftops, and it's just like, we've seen a lot of games that have urban environments that are lively. This is not that. These environments are just empty. There's empty slots. Well, that you fight ninjas in.
It means, I think it's a lot more core-like. I mean, not that you disagree with this, obviously, but as well as fighting ninjas, there is quite a lot of quite difficult platforming in this game as it goes on. And I found myself enjoying the platforming as a, to shake the gameplay up a little bit, but also it means that it's very focused. Something that's in the notes here is Rob Fahey's review of the game for Eurogamer, where he specifically says, and I'm going to have to be quite rude to Rob now, I'm sorry, a poor ripoff of a Capcom title, referring to Devil May Cry, that wasn't even the dog's bollocks in the first place. Okay, one, it was the dog's bollocks, and two, it's nothing like Devil May Cry. If you hit things with a sword, that's it. Like, I really don't see that comparison as being a reasonable one, but this was a long time ago, so I'm gonna go ahead and give Rob the benefit of the doubt that you're all right with that.
I mean, I'm just gonna say that he didn't understand the game.
I mean, that does
didn't give it the proper
I'm time gonna say day. It I'm gonna say it skill issue let's just say
no 100% and this game is absolutely brutal, like, but I think that's part of the charm in a way, where I love games that encourage you to replay it, which basically your knowledge is able to sort of transfer forward and you perform better each time. I think that's really fun. And Sega was really into that in 2002, because this is also the year of Gun Valkyrie on Xbox.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Which is another game that is absolutely brutal. And it just has a mind bending control scheme, but I also loved it.
It's the Kid Icarus Uprising of the Xbox.
Indeed. So, this game, it has been a long time since I really played it, but I remember liking it a lot back in the day. It was this and Maximo that year were two games that I really enjoyed as far as like...
That is tough stuff. Hell yeah,
Maximo mentioned, Stuart Jip Activator, now we're talking.
Right? But they're similar, right? There's these 3D takes on classic 2D action games. They're both level-based, and they're both hard as heck, right?
Yeah, they're both very different from their source material. They still capture the vibe of that
material. And they feel fresh. Well.
Yeah.
And one thing we haven't even mentioned for Shinobi, and I think, Thomas, you might have something to say on this, is his awesome red cape, which I think is such a neat touch for a 3D game. The scarf, not cape. It looks like, his red scarf. Which I believe, Thomas, element, you said was something that one of the designers sort of created by accident, like as a joke.
It was a joke. He just lengthened that scarf, and then everybody, hey, that's pretty cool. Let's leave it in there.
It was so cool.
And of course, nowadays, it's the game's signature piece in a way.
It is.
Yeah. It's so cool that they stole it for Mega Man X Command Mission. That's how cool it was.
Oh, yeah. The big scarves. And really, that scarf, I think, is that iconic piece that shows, like, these guys really had a vision for their take on Shinobi. And it was clearly a labor of love that where a lot of time and effort was poured into creating something original that still sort of, like, embodied Shinobi. And I would say, compared to a lot of other series that attempted this at the time, like the Castlevania games, for instance, which I have a soft spot for, but I don't think Lament of Innocence is nearly as good as this.
No,
because it's not, they just tried to adapt 2D map design into the 3D space, and it just didn't really work. Where these levels, I think, are better overall in terms of, like, taking a 2D style game and making it 3D.
I think that Lament of Innocence does a good job of capturing a not very good Egovania in 3D.
Yeah,
a not very good Egovania is still fun for me. So I'm just
sure
just
it's still a good game. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think this one's better, though.
But I just want to mention real quick before we move on from it that if you do have a PS3 still hooked up, you can still buy this, I believe, on the digital download store, because that's how I own it, and it's out there. I'm not sure if it's Japan only or if it's in the US port, but I'm pretty sure it's the US store. You can still buy this. It may have been delisted. I don't know. They did a lot of delisting lately, but the PS3 store they seem to be forgetting all about, so... maybe go and check it out.
It is, of course, a 60 FPS field rendered game, by the way. So it's one that's going to look best on a CRT.
Yeah.
Which...
Though it does emulate very well on PCSX2, but obviously do not do that. It's against the law.
Yes. So that's Shinobi for PS2. But Diamond has more to say about it. So let's do it.
Just one last thing, just because it blew my mind, because I like to look at I like to look up the manuals for these games. You know, to look back and see, you know, what do they tell you before you play the game? What information do they give you about the story, whatever? Yeah. And according to the manual, they give a full credit list for all the actors. But somewhere in there, because most, I gotta be honest, like the Japanese, again, this is an era where it's like the Japanese voices and English voices are just two different levels. You know, like in Japan, they hired a regular voice actor to play the lead ninja. And he's still working today. He's Cody in Street Fighter games. This guy works a lot.
Mm.
Meanwhile, the guy who plays the lead ninja in English is someone named Jordan Rosa. And no disrespect to Jordan Rosa, but he barely had any credits before, and he barely has any credits since. So it's like, who is this guy? I don't know. But in the cast list under also starring, Charles Martinet is in this somewhere. Maybe he's playing an imp. I don't know. But...
Wow.
Wait, really?
Yeah. That's what he said. It says in the book, it's Charles Martinet.
Musashi.
So wait, which version are you looking at, by the way?
I looked at the U.S. manual. The U.S. manual says also starring Charles Martinet in the back.
Wait, I found it. You're right. It's in the middle column.
Holy crap, that's three games he's in.
What on earth, dude? You've uncovered something amazing here.
I don't know. I mean, the man works on different stuff. He's got a varied hobbies.
How soon we forget Bit Trip Runner 2, Future Legend of Rhythm Alien. How soon we forget.
Well, this came first.
True, it did. It did. But it wasn't alone, this one. There was actually a follow-up to this game released remarkably quickly afterwards, it looks like, in late 2003 in Japan, and that was known as Kunoichi. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. But in where I played it, the version I had was called Nightshade, and I had no idea when I bought this that it was related to... Okay, I'm going to be completely honest with everyone here, okay? You know I like to put myself out there. I bought this game because I thought that the lead character was quite saucy. I wish I was joking. Like, I looked at it and I just went, yes, Yes, I would like to marry this ninja. So I picked it up. I mean, and
as was the style of the time.
As was I was an adolescent and I took it back home and I played it. I went, wait a minute. This is freaking Shinobi. Like, this is the sequel to Shinobi. This is awesome. Cause I knew Shinobi. Yeah. But having said that this is awesome, I have to say I don't think that this is awesome. I think this is pretty good. Like, I liked it, but I felt like a step down for me from the last one. It felt less focused and a little bit more like they'd sanded the edges off in a way that made it less fun. It's very easy by comparison to Shinobi, I think. It's got many of the same mechanics, like the Tate returns and gets triggered quite frequently. But what I did love is that I feel like they pushed the boat out in terms of the old situation rush in this game, because it has one hell of an opening stage where you're basically roaring through a city on the back of a Harrier, it looks like. While another Harrier is launching missiles at you that you deflect by simply kicking them backwards, which reminded me of Astro Boy on the GBA, where you can do much the same. But it's not bad. It's just kind of like more of it, but maybe not quite as focused, I would say. I'm not sure what else to say about it, because it doesn't really scream unique.
It's more colorful, for example. That's something.
It is, yeah. It's a brighter, more Sega-looking game. It's got Sega coming out of its pores, this one.
Yes.
I want to ask Diamond about something, because Kunoichi, meaning female ninja, specific to a female ninja, I should say. You've written that there's a joke in the, I want to say, I don't know the language. I don't want to expose myself as a not Japanese knowing person, but I don't know any Japanese whatsoever. So you're going to have to explain this to me.
I will happily explain this. It's a funny thing that I love to point out to people. So Kunoichi is a very unusual word in that it's written with three different alphabets. It's written with hiragana, it's written with katakana, and it's written with a kanji. So you've got the hiragana ku, and then you got the katakana no, and then you got the ichi, which is the straight bar, which is, you know, the kanji for one.
That's the kanji.
And if you look at these three separately, it's like, okay, kunoichi, sure. But if you look at those are the three strokes of the character for woman. If you put them all together,
I see it
that's
now,
the
yeah.
kanji for woman.
That's so weird, because on there, I have the Japanese version of the game here, and they don't write it that way at all.
No. Yeah, it's weird. It's very weird, because honestly, from a branding standpoint, you think they would have mentioned Shinobi in at least one territory, but they don't actually mention Shinobi in any territory. But in Japan, at least, you've got the big Shinobi kanji.
Yeah, you got the Shinobi kanji behind the Kunoichi name, and then they just have pure hiragana as Kunoichi rather than the clever mix there.
Right. And then if you play it in other territories, you've got the giant Shinobi kanji, but then you've got the English word nightshade in front of it, which is like, okay, so I don't read kanji, probably, so I don't know this is supposed to be a Shinobi game.
Exactly. How interesting.
So, there's a lot of odd things about this, but I do feel like it makes, at the very least, it makes a good first impression. I do love the fact that you have a big opening, which feels like the opening of like a superhero show, you know? Like, she's there, she's posing, a bunch of monsters appear, they scroll the screen around. Like, it's very kinetic. I love that opening. And like you said, the first stage is very, it's just like, what are we doing? We're riding airplanes today and kicking missiles? Okay.
It's like Bayonetta would become almost.
That's actually, it's very much like that. It also reminds me a little bit of the escalation in something like Contra Shattered Soldier. Where it's, or Neo Contra even, where it's just like, you think you know this, but we're going to 11. Like, we're going crazy with this one. Which makes it sound better than it actually is, I think, because after that, it does sort of settle down a bit, but it's not a bad game. I just,
Some things to note. First of all, at this point, Overworks had been absorbed into Sega WoW, right? Mm-hmm. So Overworks was dead. That's over. But referencing the credits, a fair number of staff that worked on the original 2002 game also worked on this one. They must have been crazy busy because they shipped
this one
fast.
Maybe they were being a bit overworked.
And while I agree it makes an interesting first impression, there's other aspects of that initial impression that I think suggest the game is worse. Specifically, I think they messed up the motion. The way the character works and moves. First of all, you have this huge dead zone area. Like if you push left, she'll kind of like go towards the left side of the screen. Then if you push right, it like the whole character model like lurches over to the right. and the animations just don't match it. So her running animation is moving through the scenery ends up looking really weird and not very smooth compared to the last game.
Yeah, I found it quite muddy and imprecise compared to Shinobi, the PS2
Shinobi. It just has a choppy feel to it that's not very pleasant. And I'd also say while it is more colorful, other aspects of the visuals can look a little bit worse somehow. Like it feels like there's less texture detail overall, and like just things about it feel a little bit weird to me. Like it just, I don't know. It feels like a game that needed more time in the oven.
Yeah, it does seem like it came out quite quickly after the first one, so they must have been right into it.
And you can tell.
Speaking of a choppy feeling that's rather unpleasant, the Tate system returns again to kill enemies with swords. And here, I found the camera even worse than it was in Shinobi, which was quite an achievement. It really swings around and gets caught up in the...
They get rid of the center button on L. Instead, it's moved to clicking the right stick.
Ouch. Yuck. Gross.
Yep, that's a real downgrade.
Yeah. It's a huge downgrade.
Though again, I should stress, I really don't think that this is bad. Like,
I'd rather play Psygirls, personally.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Psygirls, huh?
You never played it?
I only heard of it. That's Konami, right?
Yeah, I believe it uses some of the technology from Metal Gear Solid 2. Possibly. Oh, right. I can't remember for sure. I might be wrong about that.
Should we just talk about Psygirls instead for a bit?
We could switch to Psygirls.
this is now a Psygirls podcast.
Well, this was the era when you saw a lot of these developers just like the ladies were out, you know? You had Psygirls, you had Death by Degrees and Nina Williams, Piano, stuff like that, right?
But there's an episode in that, I think.
Probably, but this unfortunately doesn't quite make the grade. This is not a bad game, but it is a step down, I think, from the extreme precision and hard action of Shinobi 2002.
And then Shinobi kind of disappeared for quite a long time after this, almost not quite a decade, 8 years before.
8 years.
Eight years before it resurfaced. But
actually, if we could, before we move on, I just want to point out, like what John was saying also, if we don't forget, this came out, it was 2003 in Japan, 2004 in the rest of the world, which means by the time people were playing this, they possibly already played Tecmo's Ninja Gaiden on Xbox, which is just... That's a game, like, that's a capital G game. Like, is a game, like, it's hard as hell to get used to, but when you get used to it, you can do amazing things, and I don't think even if you get used to this game and get really good at it, I don't think you can get anywhere near as up to speed as Ryu Hayabusa does in Ninja Gaiden 2004. Not even close.
The PAL version. The PAL version of this came out at the same time as Ninja Gaiden for Xbox, but the other versions came out early. But it's all around the same time, and yeah, this has nothing compared to that.
I mean, I'll mention as well because it's here. You can play as Hotsuma from 2002 Shinobi, if you have a save from that game, I think a clear save, maybe. Though I thought that you could also play as them post game if you've beaten it. I don't think that that's just completely locked out to you.
There's a lot of unlockables and costumes. So I mean, I never beat this one, so I couldn't tell you about the details, but I know there's a lot of things like, you know, again, like many games this era, the idea was you play it a bunch of times, you get better at it, and you unlock more stuff the more you play it, like more characters who have different abilities, different looks, you know.
Which would, of course, now all be paid DLC?
Yeah.
Pretty trite observation there, sorry. Very trite observation from the Jipper there.
Stu, do you want to read Rob Fahey's word again? Because you're a gamer who hated this one.
No, again. I don't. I don't want to read it. I want someone else can read it. I'm washing my hands of Rob.
Did Rob hate it more or less than the original?
He gave it a higher score. He gave it 4 instead of 3.
All right.
Yeah.
So he played the opening level and was like, all right, this is better. And then
oh, fine, I'll read it. He said, a pretty damn poor game when stacked against PS2 contemporaries like Devil May Cry or Castlevania. He's not really wrong on that one, but I mean, he's once again mentioning Devil May Cry. The man's obsessed.
You know what's better, though, is Bujingai starring Gackt.
Really?
I'm not even joking. From Taito and Red Company.
I always laugh when Gak comes up on Retronauts. I just can't help it. Sorry.
I don't blame you at all. But, you know, he's all over that game. If you've not played Bujingai, I recommend doing so, because it's just, it's also got a great introduction, because the game begins with no logos, menus, or anything. Like, you put it in, and it's just instantly in the game, and you're just fighting dudes. You're like, wait, what's going on? And then after... it's got a cold open, and then as soon as you beat the last enemy in that area, it goes to like a title sequence, like starring Gackt and all this kind of stuff. And it's got like a whole music video kind of thing going.
Yeah, I remember this because I did actually play this quite recently. I remember thinking, this isn't dissimilar to Shinobi, 2002 Shinobi, vibes-wise. But Shinobi then vanished, as mentioned, for about 8 years until it made its triumphant-ish return in Shinobi.
Is there no evidence, Stu, of there being like mobile phone games of Shinobi during this era? I feel like that's something that would have happened. Diamond?
I looked it up, John, and the only thing I found mention of, and credit to Hardcore Gamer for this, because I didn't even know this existed. It's not mentioned on Wikipedia. There was apparently a Chinese-developed mobile game that came out the same year, so 2011, the same year as the 3DS game.
Amazing.
And they called it, like, Shinobi 2 in English, but the Chinese title is something else. But at least from an international standpoint, they called it Shinobi 2, apparently with Sega's permission.
All right.
I don't know.
That sounds exactly like the kind of thing you would have expected. And you're right. I see this here on Hardcore Gaming 101. Always a great site, by the way.
It is.
Yeah.
Interesting screenshots. That's the thing about mobile games from this era, is they often looked beautiful, but then you see them move and you're like, oh.
Yeah. I always think of like the Ratchet and Clank game or the God of War game. It looks absolutely amazing. And then
it's like, it runs at 5 FPS. Sweet.
Yeah. But speaking of running at 5 FPS, Shinobi 3D didn't run at 5 FPS. Yeah, but it did run in 3D on the 3DS in 2011.
It only had 30 frames per second, though.
It did. But this was developed by Griptonite Games, and they are a bit of a interesting one for me, because they made a lot of licensed games for the DS that are all surprisingly excellent, I think. Like, they made Spider-Man Web of Shadows, which is like a Metroidvania of 2D game, which was brilliant. And they also made Shattered Dimensions, similar. But they also, to my preference, they made X-Men Origins Wolverine, which we all know was great on the 360.
I love that game.
On the DS, it is a shockingly good game, and it's amazingly close to this Shinobi game, weirdly enough, because you've got your parry with the claws, you've got your combos, you've got everything, and the Captain America Super Soldier on DS, which is extremely similar. They're all really good games that I would recommend anyone play, honestly. But they made this, Shinobi 3D, in which you're playing as Jiro Musashi, who is like the father of Joe Musashi, so it's a prequel, I guess. I mean, it makes sense that it would be a prequel. And
it's 3D now.
I played this back when it came out. I had this, and I didn't think much to it, but I went back to it for this, and I found myself going, you know what? This is pretty good. I like this. I don't love it. I think it's too hard, which is, I know, skill issue, but I really do think this game is nails hard from the beginning, and you really have to rewire your brain to work out how to approach any of the enemies. They'll all get you if you're not careful.
Yeah, and it's just that is my problem. The countering mechanic kills the game for me. Yep.
I think the fact that, I like the countering, but I think that it's a very disheartening game, because this is very based around scoring. Like, everything is scoring you or taking score away from you. And when you're getting hit by enemies that are just flying into a flurry of blades with like no wind up whatsoever from off the screen and hitting you, and your score is dropping, you're just like, that's not fair. And you can adapt to it. You can get used to the fact that every enemy you approach is going to throw at least 3 kunai at you before you get anywhere near them. And if you try and throw a kunai at them, they'll just throw one at you faster and get you. But I don't hate this. I think this is pretty good. I had a good time once I got used to it, once I got to grips with it. Griptonite, you see.
I mean, the game really has a lot of heart, I think. They really wanted to make something good out of this.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a bad game. I think it's a bit of an acquired taste, and that's not That's damning it with faint praise in a way, but they really tried. Like, there's a lot of things that call back to, like, Shinobi 3 with, like, the horseback stage, which isn't as good as the horseback stage in Shinobi 3, I might as well add, because it's like the sort of thing you'd play over the phone on Live and Kicking or something. Sorry for referencing Live and Kicking once again, listeners.
I wish they had a shot at making a second game like this, because to me, this occupies a similar space as the Metroid 2 remake.
Oh, Samus Returns.
Right. Because, like, Samus Returns was good, but I thought it got bogged down with the counter mechanic, and there was just things about it that made it kind of annoying to play. Yeah. But then those guys went on to do Metroid Dread, which I thought was significantly better.
Yeah, agreed.
And I feel like this game has enough promise in it where you're like, I feel like with a second shot at this, they probably could have actually figured it out and got made something really great. But as it is, it does kind of get bogged down by some of the mechanics, and it becomes a little tedious, I feel.
I think I'd agree. I think one issue I had with the game when I booted it up, well, it was earlier today, I played it again, actually. There are tutorials in the game, but when you launch it, it genuinely gives you about 17 pages of instructions to flick through. Like, here's all the things you can do. And I'm like, okay, either give me fewer things to do or introduce them more gradually than this, because I'm going into this game like, what the hell? I've got like 600 commands at my fingertips. And the game does not have a learning curve. It's just like nails. Like, the first enemy will hit you like twice. And I don't think Shinobi was ever really about that. It was never about the balls hard. Like, I mean, it was challenging. But it was not this ridiculous level of difficulty.
I don't think the movement system and animation is good enough to support the level of difficulty they have here. Yeah. And the fact that it's limited to 30 frames per second also
that's a huge hurts. Blow against it.
Like, if this had been 60 and the animation's polished up a little bit, I think it would have felt so much better.
I mean, even if it was just at 60, I think it would have been
just much at 60, more right? Exactly. I think that would have helped a lot. And I feel like they probably should have done more to ensure they could hit that, including, if they had to, just change the visual style. Even to straight 2D graphics, but like with that 3D effect, looked awesome, and they could have done it at 60 on the 3DS.
Yeah.
So I think they made a mistake by trying to do 3D at 30 FPS in this game.
I mean, there are elements of it that I do like. I do enjoy the platforming, like when you're wall jumping and then double jumping to clear the spikes, for example, early on, and then you're wall jumping onto another wall in midair and then off that wall and over more spikes. And it just makes you feel very dynamic. It's a little bit contrived compared to the level design in the other games. I think it's a lot more gamey, but that's, you know, it's fine. It's just, I did enjoy the platforming. I just wish that the combat was less annoying.
Oh man, I was about to say that this was the only 30 FPS Shinobi games, but then I remembered the Game Gear games are also 30.
Yeah,
but that screen is so smeary it barely matters.
And those games are also quite I do love those games, but they are slower and more methodical than this, and they don't kill the shit out of you quite so aggressively. But I don't hate this by any means. I liked it. I'm probably going to play more of it because I did have fun with it, but I just wish, I don't know. I mean, it's the best, it's a pretty decent 2D Shinobi, and it's probably better than Shinobi Legions, but that's,
it is more potential than fun. That's the thing.
Yeah.
The one thing I will say, and I have weirdly fond memories of this in the sense that this game came out a few months after my son was born. I remember there were nights where we would, you know, to sit up and sort of watch him and comfort him and as he tries to sleep. And I remember playing this in the middle of the night while watching him try to peacefully fall asleep. So when I think about this game, I think about those early days when he was like just a few months old.
Right.
So there's a little bit nostalgic feel there.
Shinobaby.
Shinobaby, exactly.
There's a spinoff we haven't got yet.
Yeah, Shinobi Kids.
I want to give a shout out also because Griptonite Games disappeared shortly after this game came out. They got folded into some larger corporation. I don't think they exist today in any meaningful way, but a lot of the personnel on this game formed together later. I found a couple names that I'm not sure how to pronounce. Taryn Millet, M-I-L-L-E-T, Christopher Derschmidt, that sounds possibly German, I don't know, but those people and others made Volgar the Viking, which is a very cool action platformer.
And,
so,
and the sequel came out recently.
Those are awesome. That's great.
Yeah.
See, that's interesting because I like Volgar the Viking, but it's also, it gives me the same level of anger that this game does.
Dude, Volgar is brutal.
Volgar, Volgar is unbelievably annoying in a good way. Like, you will die and you go, how did I miss that? God damn it. Like, it's very frustrating to me, but I do like it a lot.
My goodness.
Definitely more precise than this is. It's definitely better feel than this is, I would say.
Yeah, I agree.
Not 3D for sure thing.
We should mention the sequel, Volgar the Viking 2, came out relatively recently as well, and that's also quite good. So, yeah. But that actually, until very recently, that's the final Shinobi game until Shinobi Art of Vengeance was formally announced quite recently, wasn't it? Was it the Game Awards or was it after that?
It was a Sony State of Play event.
That's and it's, the one.
It actually,
yeah.
It was actually formally announced very shortly after we recorded our first Shinobi episode. So it was one of those like Retronauts things where we talk about, oh yeah, this series has been dead for a long time. Oh, it's coming out later this year.
Yeah, so they showed it in that sizzle thing they did of like, here are the five games that we're doing. Like,
exactly,
like the Sega 5, Jet Set Radio, Crazy Taxi, Golden Axe, Streets of Rage, and this.
We knew the series was coming back, but
I think me and John and Thomas talked about it off record at one point because I remember that getting shown and just immediately going, that looks like Lizard Cube. That's definitely Lizard Cube. And then I didn't know that for a fact until a bit later, but now that we've seen quite a lot of it, how are we feeling about this new Shinobi game, Art of Vengeance?
Basically, it looks very good. The one thing I'm a bit wary of is it seems a bit combo heavy this time. So in Shinobi games, I hit an enemy once and the enemy is gone. This time I have to do 2-hit, 3-hit combos and so on. So I will have to see how that works with the overall formula.
I personally, I'm a little bit skeptical, but it's one of those things where my skepticism is tempted by the fact that these people made Streets of Rage 4. They know what they're doing. I'm sure this will be good. It looks like it might be a Metroidvania, which I'm also a little bit kind of about, but I could be wrong.
I don't know. Based on the trailer, I'm going to guess that it's not a Metroidvania. There's enough stuff in there that suggests to me that maybe it has more open-ended levels, but I don't think it's going to be actually like a large interconnected map necessarily.
That's good. I would be glad of that. Nothing against the Metroidvania as a fundamental concept. I'm just a bit fed up with them now.
Yeah, no, I agree.
The fact that there's been a lot recently. Yeah.
To make it sort of symmetrical in this podcast, at least, I feel like Art of Vengeance, artistically and pose-wise, the way the ninja looks, the way the ninja moves, it reminds me a lot of Shinobi 3.
Oh, yeah, they're definitely taking inspiration from that one here.
I think that is their main inspiration, extra.
Yeah, there's also a grapple hook in this, isn't there? Like, hooking onto grapple points and flinging yourself across the map I've seen, which looks very automated, I have to say, which is one of the things that made me go, about it. But
the thing I will say, Stu, is that these guys understood Streets of Rage in a way that I didn't necessarily think was possible.
I completely agree. Streets of Rage 4 is amazing.
I think Streets of Rage 4 is arguably one of the greatest brawlers that's ever been made. Like, it's mechanically perfect in a way that's like, okay, this is awesome.
I think if someone said to me, this is the best brawler ever made, I would find it hard to disagree with them. Like,
which
it's
is why,
phenomenal.
Even with the concerns, I feel like I have enough faith in what these guys are attempting that I'm not too worried about it yet.
Yeah. And that's out August 2025, not long now.
Oh, man, I cannot wait.
I'm going to be playing the hell out of this for sure. Now, that's all of the Shinobi games, I believe. But that's been quite an expedient coverage of them. So well done, everyone. We snuck in like a ninja and we covered all the games and we didn't alert any of the guards. So that's good.
All right, we went in Shinobi style.
Yeah, although I don't know why I said alert the guards when that's not really a Shinobi thing at all. That betrays my stupidity there. What were you saying, Diamond? Sorry?
I just want to ask an unfair question since we have a moment.
Oh, I love those.
The series has so many forms. Like, there really is no one quintessential Shinobi game.
Yeah.
You can't point to one and say, this is the Shinobi game we all need to mimic. But I'm just curious, amongst us here, which Shinobi game is your favorite? Because there's so many.
Master System Shinobi 1. Nostalgia. Can't lose.
Okay.
Wow.
Well,
I think it's an absolutely brilliant port of a very good game. I think it improves the original game big time. And I grew up loving it. I love the atmosphere. I love the vibes. I love the level design. I love that it's not too long. I'm not insane. I don't think it's actually the best one all told. I think that's probably 3, but it's definitely my favorite.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So if I can go next, I would absolutely go with Super Shinobi with the first one. I mean, we talked about that. The second one has a lot of qualities, but I think the first one is just a bit more of a timeless classic, and really hits every note perfectly for me.
Which I can't disagree with, but I got to go with the third one, or with Shinobi 3, or the Super Shinobi 2, as you might call it, which I think is just, it's basically a perfect 16-bit action game from start to finish.
What about you, Diamond? You got the deciding vote.
A vote.
It's not a vote. It's everyone expressing their own personal
vote. It is a vote.
Well, much like you, Stu, I feel like my own personal emotions kind of prevent me from like being objective as far as what game matters most to me. And to me, I just played so much of Revenge Shinobi, and I've listened to that soundtrack so many times. It's basically playing in my head at all times. Like, even when I'm not playing video games, the music is rattling in there somewhere. You know, it's always ready to come out, and just I might vocalize it to myself for no reason because that's how good it is. So that's the one I think of the most, honestly. But I do think it's remarkable, honestly, the fact that you have 3 different Shinobi games on the Mega Drive Genesis, and even though 2 of them are technically sequels and one of them is technically a arcade port, really they're 3 different games, and I think they're all excellent. Excellent game.
Absolutely.
Which I really feel like if you go back to our recent talk about, like, say, Golden Axe, like, there's 3 Golden Axe games on the Sega Mega Drive Genesis, but they're not all excellent. I mean, you might have your favorite, but they're not all excellent. Mm-hmm. I think all 3 Shinobi games on that platform are excellent games.
And I think that's a rather good place to wrap it up, because we've formally decided that all the Shinobi games are good, as all games are good, as we all remember very fondly.
Really?
From the excellent book of the same name. Please buy it.
Look, Stu, I know you like to sell your book, but come on. Didn't we just rush past Revenge of Shinobi GBA because we all agreed it was kind of shit?
No, this whole thing has actually just been a psyop to get you to promote my book. Sorry. My bad. No, I kid. Thank you very much for joining Diamond in the previous episode. Thank you for hosting that episode so excellently. And thank you, John. Thank you, Thomas, for joining us. We couldn't have done it without you, obviously. If it's Sega, we got to get the Euro Nuts in. We got to do it. But where can our lovable scamp listeners find you online? John, let's start with you.
I'm on Digital Foundry, and you can find me on social media at Dark1X. And youtube.com/Digital Foundry. We post over there. We also have our articles over on eurogamer.net/Digital Foundry. So you'll find me all over the place.
Thomas?
Right. If you want to find me, you can find me on Blue Sky at Tapir Fortuna, like the animal and then Fortuna. Or if you're in Germany, buy an issue of M Games. We like that. And you can read a lot of the stuff I write in there as well.
Diamond, I think that our listeners would love to know where to find you.
Sure. Well, I'm around the internet in lots of places. I do a lot of work for Retronauts. But for everything else, I would say go to my website, which is fightclub.me. F-E-I-T is my last name. C-L-U-B, that's an English word, regular word, .me. I'm also Fight Club on most services. So, you know, I'm around, and we, you know, I certainly enjoy talking about Shinobi games in general, and ninja stuff, and Japanese culture, ninja movies. I've seen a lot of ninja movies lately, too, so, yeah.
And I'm Stuart Jip, and you can find me by looking for the name Stuart Jip. Please do not worry about the guy with my name who killed himself. That's not me. That's someone else. Okay. anyway, exclusive episodes of Retronauts. Wouldn't you like to listen to them? Wouldn't you all like to listen to them? Yes, I know. And you can. Now, for $3 a month on the Retronauts Patreon, which is patreon.com/retronauts, you can get our weekly episodes a week in advance, which will make you incredibly... Yeah, really. For real. Genuinely. Yeah.
Amazing.
But for a mere... I know it is. But for it's incredibly cheap, isn't it? And for a mere $2 more, though, a mere $5, which is less than your venti frappuccino or whatever you kids are drinking these days. I don't even know. Your avocado toast, your nonsense. You will be able
frappe.
To avocado frappe on toast. You will be able to with a man bun. I don't know. I'm just being a dick. You will be able to get hold of exclusive episodes that I recently alluded to. And there are two of those per month. Full length episodes, no half measures. In fact, I remember one of them was even Super Metroid, for goodness sake. And you'd think, you know, everyone wants to hear what we think about Super Metroid. I certainly wanted to know. And when I heard it coming out of my own mouth, I was astonished. By my own opinion. But you also get Diamond Fight's tremendous This Week in Retro columns in both audio and written form, and they really are very, 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 very good. So I recommend getting in on that. They're really good, Diamond.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. I'll praise you to the skies all day long, because it's true. And that goes for any of you. And you can also get onto our Discord, the Retronauts Discord, where you can currently... has movie thingy ended? I can't remember if it's still going. It might have ended by the time this goes out, but we'll probably be doing some other project.
We're recording this in April, so we just finished our month-long movie madness, and indeed, Mortal Kombat was the winner. 95. Mortal Kombat 95.
It was, and it deserved it very much so. That's good to hear. But there'll be other projects coming along, which I don't think I can talk about yet. But we're doing some fun things on there soon. And of course, you can go on there, you can talk to us, and we'll talk to you. We will reach down from our pedestal, and we will bless you with the light grays of our touch. By which I mean I will go in there and get pissy about News of Mario Brothers every few months, as usually happens. And thank you very much for listening. I was going to do an April Fool's joke because it's April Fool's, but then I realized that by the time this goes out, it won't be April Fool's. So April Fool's, I didn't do a joke. Hooray. I hate April Fool's Day. It sucks. But what doesn't suck is all of you. So thank you very much both for listening and for participating. And we'll be back with more Sega soon, as well as other things that aren't Sega. Goodbye.
Sega Super System.
Sega Blue Skies.